Joining us today on The Culture Kitch, Mr. Extreme himself, Shane McConkie, next. I'd like to thank today's sponsor, WebHSP. You've got a question about web hosting? Go to webhsp.com.
This is Dusty Wright with The Culture Kitch, and joining us today, we're very excited to have one of the extreme extremists in the world of extreme sports, Mr. Shane McConkie. Shane, welcome to The Culture Kitch.
Thank you very much.
We just saw you in the movie Steep. By the time people see this and hear this podcast, it'll just be hitting the theaters, and it's rather impressive. It's not that all that you do, but just the ski element and the narrative of that movie. How long ago did they approach you to participate in the project?
It was about 2 years ago now. And it was really, you know, an interesting, unique opportunity for us. Being a professional skier, my job is to be in ski movies, which is, you know, niche, you know, ski culture specific. We call all those movies ski porn. And so to get the opportunity to do a project with something that could be a little more mainstream and show our sport to the world in a way that we wouldn't normally be able to do is a lot of fun.
Not to denigrate Warren Miller, but he's kind of held up the whole industry for all these years as being the guy that did the movie every single year that, you know, you got it for Christmas, or a buddy sent you a copy or something, or, you know, you ran off a, you know, tape copy, a VHS copy. But this takes it to a different level artistically, certainly the way it was shot and the love and attention that went into the detail of the assembling of the footage, the old archival footage. Yeah, I think it's going to open it up. I think you're absolutely right. It is niche content, skiing. And, you know, certainly people say, well, skiing is a sport for rich people, you know. And it didn't start out that way when you look at the history of skiing.
No, skiing has a lot of history. It's an old sport. It's been around for a long time, and there's a lot of different specialty events within that sport, and it's a lifestyle for a lot of people, and it's an incredibly freeing feeling to slide on snow down a mountain, and I just hope that if people watch this movie, they can get some of that. They can, even if they don't ski at all, can watch this movie and say, wow, that looks like a hell of a lot of fun. I think I'd like to try that sliding down the snow thing, whether it's on skis or a snowboard or just going hiking in the mountains without skis. If they can feel some of that that experience that we have in the mountains, it would be a great thing to leave the theater with.
I think that's probably one of the general themes of the movie, and that goes back to Thoreau saying man's happiest when he's back in nature, and you're absolutely right. If it's even just a hike in the woods, and especially for us who live in these urban centers, these congested urban centers, once you get up into the mountains and the fresh air, last year we go to Sundance, and Richard was adamant about us, like, let's blow off a day and just ski. So we went to Alta, which is, in that neck of the woods, is pretty rugged, non-commercial skiing, as much as you can get, I guess, in that neighborhood. And we're certainly not doing what you guys are doing, hiking the backwoods. But it was invigorating. It really, I think it charged our batteries.
Yeah. It's a hell of a lot of fun. It's most important to get outside and get your blood pumping at least once a day. And if you can do that in a mountain environment, out in the fresh air, and fly through the air really fast on snow, well, then it's that much better.
How did you get hooked to it?
I came from a skiing family. My dad was a ski instructor. He had the ski school in Whistler. My mom was a passionate skier all growing up. That's how my mom and dad met. And then, even though they got divorced when I was three, they both, stayed in the mountains, stayed skiing, and there's basically no escape for me.
She's still skiing competitively, right?
Yeah. My mom competes on the Masters Tour, and she trains harder than anyone I've ever met, is in better shape than any 65-year-old, I think, in the world.
That's incredible.
It's pretty inspiring. Yeah.
Did you have aspirations as a young man to try to hit that? The Olympic ski thing, the giant slalom, and some of the other.
Yep. I grew up ski racing, And back then, there wasn't really any other way as a young skier to kind of see a future to be successful other than winning the Olympics at ski racing.
Right.
And then kind of freestyle moguls and all that stuff kind of came up and tried my hand at that a little bit. And then, you know, in the early 90s, mid-90s, you know, this whole free skiing revolution kind of happened, and it changed skiing dramatically. Technology changed and style changed, and all of a sudden skiing became this huge thing and in a different way, which opened up a lot of doors for young people.
Now, for you, was it guys like Glenn who were just pushing the envelope but having so much fun doing it, and were, you know, they're doing like this punk rock ski thing almost. You know, it was the music, the soundtrack. You know, it was just in the infancy of the X Games, I suspect, right?
Yeah, well,
or even before that curve.
I think we live in a really lucky time as people who do alternative style sports. You don't have to beat the clock anymore. You don't have to beat the other guy. You don't have to win over the judges in order to make a living and do your sport at the highest professional level. What's more important with a lot of these sports, surfing, skateboarding, skiing, snowboarding, BMX, a lot of these alternative extreme style sports, is you have to get a good segment in a movie. And that's more important than winning or beating anybody or impressing the judges. You have to have a creative, original, ripping segment in the ski porn that comes out every year. And that's great, I think, because it allows the sport to be creative and to show off your skills and do things to progress the sport in unique ways. And it's not just about a specialty niche type of clock beating or you know, scoring points with the judges. We live in a really unique time. It's a great time for the sport.
Great answer. And also, you know, you bring up the whole extreme lifestyle is also kind of pushing the envelope in some ways. It's not conforming to the traditional athletic mode of transportation, where, you know, maybe the training is vigorous but in a non-conventional way, and, like, you know, a lot more cross training, because a lot of these guys and you guys are skateboarding, surfing, and crossing over, not just focusing on maybe downhill skiing, just specifically the GS or something else. You know, you're practicing your acrobatic moves, you know, you're skydiving, you're doing all these other things.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of these sports cross over. You know, a lot of kids are skateboarding in the summer, and they take all that skill and they take it to the terrain park in the winter, and they do it on skis.
Right.
And, you know, I like to mountain bike in the summer. You know, I take that kind of mindset and take it up into the mountains. I do a lot of parachuting, skydiving, and base jumping. And when I'm in the mountains in the wintertime, I'm up there looking at lines like, which line could I ski so that I could eventually fly off with, you know, with my parachute on my back. So, yeah, sports are kind of all kind of melting together, and kind of which helps create different aspects of the sports too. So it's cool.
Yeah, like you said, there's an aesthetic that isn't required on speed and timing. It's more about grace and style. And something that was very interesting to me that in the movie was the lines that you guys and gals are carving now is much more stylized than the first guys who were just trying to get down the mountain without killing themselves. And then suddenly it got ramped up by the Americans. They came on the scene and said, hey, wait, man, we can carve down these sheer cliffs.
Yeah, well, what you're talking about is a little bit different. There's the ski mountaineering extreme descent style of skiing, and a lot of those runs are so steep that if you do slip, you know, and fall, you're dead.
And so you do have to really...
That's the pure, like, extreme alpinism type of stuff. You don't see that in ski movies very often because it's such a slow, methodical way of descending a mountain. It's more like down climbing.
Right.
Than actual what people think is skiing. What we do in the movies, what I do is we choose stuff that isn't actually super if you fall, you die steep, so that we can rip it as fast as we can and show off our dynamic, fast skiing skills, jumping off cliffs, skiing really fast, skiing dynamically. That's what we do versus people like, you know, Andrew McLean, who's a pure, you know, ski mountaineer, extreme descent guy who's doing the really gnarly if you fall, you die stuff.
And he's climbing to these insane cliff sheer walls. I know you watch Andrews and capturing that that moment when they have the avalanche and the three of them, you think they're buried under the the snow. That's
there's proof of it
right there, man.
They did a hell of a job capturing that avalanche. Couldn't have staged it any better than that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't staged, and it's a pretty intense moment, that's for sure.
But you're being modest here, Shane. When you go flying off the edge, you know, people have no idea that you've got a parachute strapped to your back. I mean, if you're just a casual skier and you walk up in the scene, you see that. That's pretty intense for people, I think.
Yeah,
you know, the average person
sure.
to see.
It freaks people out. But you know, that's another fun thing about the sport of skiing. You know, is like there's a lot of ski mountaineers who use a rope as an extra tool in their gear to be able to access ski lines in the backcountry.
Right.
I also use a parachute as an extra tool in my gear to access a different type of line in the backcountry. And it's another tool to help you enjoy the mountain in a different way.
Right.
And it's dangerous. But, you know, ski mountaineering is really dangerous too. So, but it sure is fun.
To each his own. Well, what day did you have that breakthrough moment where you thought I'm gonna attach these two elements together? I'm gonna attach my free base, my freestyle jumping with the skiing.
I try not to free base while I'm skiing.
Exactly.
But
don't try it at home.
No, actually, a guy named Rick Sylvester back in 1974 skied off El Cap with a parachute, and this was before base jumping was even called base jumping. It wasn't defined. And he did it so that, because back then they were jumping round parachutes and the wind could just blow them in any old direction back into the wall and you could die. So he thought, I'll ski off this cliff as fast as I could, as I can, in order to get far away from the cliff, which presents other hazards. but I wasn't the first to do it. It was thought of a long time ago, and it's something I've always wanted to do ever since I saw Rick Sylvester in The Spy Who Loved Me opening chase scene, ski off Mount Asgard in Baffin Island.
Huh.
Yeah, I was like, I got to do that someday because I'm a base jumper. I'm also a skier, and why not, you know, check that one off the list? So I tried it with my buddy JT Holmes back in 2003 in South Shore Lake Tahoe, just to check it off the list, to be like, you got to do this. It's too much fun.
Right.
When we did it, we realized that, holy crap, this is really easy. This is really fun and really easy, and we're going to keep doing this over and over again. It wasn't just a one-time stunt thing to check off the list. We realized that on that day, we realized that this is something that we could add to our backcountry arsenal to go and have some fun in the mountains in a different way.
Right.
And so now, because of that, we're looking at mountains with totally different goggles.
Right.
You know, everybody's looking over here at what they can ski, and we're over here looking at the lines over there that ended in a big cliff that no one could ever consider skiing before because it ends in a big cliff. Where are you going to go?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Well, now we know where to go, right off the edge.
That's unbelievable. How much of your day is just dedicated to being in shape and practicing your craft?
In the winter, I'm trying to get out there every day. I don't get out every day, but, you know, just in the winter, just pretty much trying to stay on the mountain, stay in shape. In the summer and off season, I like to ride my mountain bike, I like to hike, I like to run in the trails in Tahoe where I live. But I have a 2-year-old daughter now, so it's really hard to get out there as much as you used to. But it's, you know,
how about
still
the
fun.
Mind shift of that? How about, like, you know, before, when you're single or just getting married, or maybe the marriage, each step when you're single, you don't have. You have more of a carefree lifestyle. You don't have people maybe counting on you to come home at night. Because there is a high fatality rate in these sports. There's no question.
Yeah.
You add a child to the mix. Does that change you emotionally?
It hasn't changed my passion for what I'm doing, because I still want to get out there and do what I love to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are dangerous activities that we're doing. And when I look at my beautiful little daughter and I see her saying things like, well, where did daddy go? Where's mommy? Where'd mommy go? And I imagine me gone and her saying that. I'm just like, holy crap, you know, I got to be careful. I can't possibly imagine leaving her behind and having her grow up without a dad. You know, so it definitely makes you concerned. But I think it just makes me kind of you know, triple check, quadruple check everything I'm doing to make sure that I don't screw up.
What is the fatality rate percentage wise? Is there a set number?
I have no idea. There's a base fatality list online. You can see how many people have died in space jumping. It's about 120 probably people have died doing it, but it's gotten a lot safer in the last few years. Skiing, you know, there's a hell of a lot more people skiing, and of course, a hell of a lot more people dying.
Right.
And people always talk about, you know, the death thing, but you know, look at motocross. Look at a lot of these high altitude mountaineering. There's a lot of sports that are.
Well, America's just a lot more litigious, so you know, if somebody can sue somebody, and as we, you know, as the movie points out, it's a lot easier in Europe and other places where they're not so concerned with the law to practice these crafts or experience these experiences.
Yeah, and I think because of that, in places like Europe, they generally respect adventurers a little bit more than in the States, where everything's very controlled. We're not in the land of the free when it comes to adventure sports.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely not. We're in a land that kind of frowns on it in a way. And you notice that when every time we talk about our sports to the media, they're talking about, oh, death, this, and dying that, and you're crazy this, and you're crazy that. Well, you go to Europe, and there's some of that, but people kind of understand why, you know, the spirit of adventure is so thrilling to everybody. It's more accepted over there.
Right, right. Do you still get that rush every single time you go out there?
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing.
Yeah.
For sure.
Does it make you push the envelope a little bit more to say I need a little bit more of the endorphins to kick in? Makes you want to go a little bit further out?
Yeah, it's not an adrenaline endorphin thing. I think it's just like any other sport. You know, you enjoy what you're doing, and then you reach up to you get up to a certain level, and you think that was as far as you could go. Mm-hmm. You think that's your limit, and then you reach that.
Right.
Then you go a little bit higher, and you reach that, and then your limit just keeps getting pushed. And it's rather than a big adrenaline rush, endorphin thing. It's more of a let's explore what's possible in our sport, and that's what's enjoyable about sports, I think, is even when a beginner at any sport becomes an intermediate, and all of a sudden the learning curve just goes blam.
Mm.
That's the most thrilling time of any sport, I think, for a lot of people, is when they've gotten over that beginner hump, and then all of a sudden they start learning exponentially, and that's super fun. And even though I'm not an intermediate at these sports, I'm an expert. Whenever you reach your limit and you go beyond that and you find out what's possible, what's next, it's a thrilling thing. It's really exciting.
Is there one sport you wish you were more expert at than another?
I'd like to get better at mountain biking. Surfing. I'm a terrible surfer. I'd love to get better at surfing. It's just a time thing.
Right.
I'm learning to fly my wingsuit, you know,
base jumping with a wingsuit. We talked about that off camera.
Yeah, I'd like to get better at that.
Talk about the wingsuit and this whole new dynamic. And
wingsuit's an amazing tool that's been around for about, you know, 10 or 15 years. But
how
in the last few years, it's just developed exponentially. People are getting really good, and the technology's getting really good.
But it started from skydiving? Was that when it was first utilized in skydiving?
Yeah, I mean, people have been playing with wingsuit-ish type suits since people first started jumping out of airplanes. You know, a long time ago, but the modern wingsuits were built about 15 years ago, and they've changed dramatically. It's kind of like if you followed skiing at all in the last 15 years, the technology has exploded. 15 years ago, we were all skiing on pretty much the same thing. They called them different types of skis, but they were pretty much the same thing. Nowadays, it's like surfboard shapes. There's everything out there, from shape skis to fat skis to skinny skis to, you know, skis with reverse camber, rocker.
Well, you developed those, right?
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I've been having fun with that as well. But wingsuit technology is going through the same
different fabrics, progression. How far they're curved and everything.
Yeah, there's kind of your all terrain type of wingsuit that's kind of good for everything, acrobatics. And then there's distance wingsuits. You almost need a quiver, like a golf quiver.
Right.
Because, you know, for some base jumps, the terrain that you are flying over is low angle. So you need a big, giant distance flying suit, and you need to be able to fly that well to clear out all the terrain.
Right.
Some cliffs are big and steep, and you can have a smaller suit for proximity flying next to the wall. And, you know, there's other suits that are built for acrobatics. You can fly on your back and do, you know, things like that, and flips and all that kind of stuff.
Is this going to be the next extreme competition, you think?
Sure. I have no idea where it'll go. There's a lot of people getting good at wingsuit flying. So
well, that video, once it hit the internet and YouTube, I think everyone that was into sports or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about an explosion.
I've never had any video that I've been in get that many, you know, that many million hits.
I know, it's pretty radical.
Yeah, pretty cool.
How many times have you done it now?
Wingsuit base jump?
Yeah.
Oh, 40 or 50 now, yeah, probably. I'm not that good at wingsuit flying, but every time I go skydiving, that's what I'm doing. I'm practicing for wingsuit base jumping because that's, right. You know, if you're not wearing a wingsuit, you can still fly, but it's pretty much controlled falling.
Right.
With a wingsuit, it's flight. It's cool.
What would be the time difference between, you know, hitting the ground theoretically, you know, free fall versus the wingsuit? How much does it slow you?
It depends on how big of a suit you have, but at least half.
Really?
But it's, no, I mean, the time, you can't say that because with most cliffs, impact is at a much higher elevation. If you dropped a rock straight down, you're going to hit way up on the talus.
Right.
With a wingsuit, you'd fly all the way down to the valley floor.
Okay.
If it was totally flat ground below you,
right,
in a, you know, big field, well, yeah, I would say maybe less than half the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Pretty fun stuff.
Right. Now, have you tried it with the skis?
Wingsuit with the skis?
Yeah.
Yeah. We took the skis off after a few flips and then flew away in the wingsuit. But
So how do you get the skis? You have a quick release or something?
Yeah, pretty much.
Hand release.
We use these old bindings that have an upward pull release.
Right.
And then strings come up to our thighs with handles on them, and we just yanked our skis off and flew away. Yeah.
Amazing.
You should try it. It's really fun.
Yeah. I'm sure my two kids would like.
Yeah.
50-year-old guy. All right, let me try this, honey. I haven't done anything in about 10 years challenging.
Yeah.
Now, where do you think the sports are converging? Are there any other convergences that we're missing? Are you guys on the cusp of creating some new things?
Well, if you've heard of speed flying or speed gliding, is kind of the newest big deal going on right now. It's basically high performance skydiving parachutes or they're really small paragliders.
Mm.
And they're launching with skis on the top of a mountain from the ground, and flying really fast down the mountainside, and touching down, making some turns on skis, and then when the big cliff comes up, they stab the brakes and go flying up and off the cliff. And so it's basically a mesh of skiing and paragliding. It's pretty cool.
Wow. And what would be the ultimate place to try that in the States?
Europe would be better than in the States, but anywhere where there's a lot of vertical.
A lot of vertical.
Yeah.
So up in Alaska.
Yeah.
Valdez.
Valdez, yeah,
Valdez.
For sure. And anywhere where there's big mountains.
Right.
Rockies. Well,
is there a place that's more, that's friendlier to this, to the extreme experience in the U.S. that's, I mean, I know they're all locked down because they're all owned by corporations, a lot of the big ski mountains now. Is there one place that's friendlier than the rest?
I don't know. I ski at Squaw because there's a lot of great terrain there.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of places, you know, with insurance issues we have in the States, you know, you're like, can't launch a paraglider from this mountain. You can't.
And the experts have to come out and test the air and the wind directions, rather.
Well, yeah, it's just all what each individual mountain decides to allow. You know, usually ski resorts allow skiing and snowboarding, and that's it. And a lot of them don't even allow you to leave there.
Some don't even let snowboarders
in. Backcountry. There's a couple of those left, too, which is pretty weird.
Yeah. Deer Valley and...
Deer Valley, Alta.
Alta.
Taos.
A couple
Mad
places
River Glen.
In New York and up in Vermont. Mad River Glen.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. When you were growing up, did you ever think you'd make a living doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
That was goal number one. That was a plan from the beginning. I didn't want anything else.
Who are your heroes growing up?
Oh, I was a ski racer, so I watched a lot of Phil Mayer, Phil and Steve Mayer, Ingemar Stenmark, James Bond.
Right.
And, yeah, and then when I got a little bit older, I started watching ski movies, Scott Schmidt, Glenn Plake, all those guys in those movies kind of made me realize there's something else to do out there on skis rather than just skiing around gates. So,
yeah. What year did you make that transition from competitive skiing to freestyle?
Free riding. 91, 92, something like that.
Right.
I was still competing on the Pro Mobile Tour, so I thought it was an interesting change. But as I was doing that, I was doing the other kind of, you know, the free skiing stuff as well for fun.
Right. And how do you unwind when you're not doing any of these extreme activities? Do you listen to music? Do you read? Do you play music?
I don't play any instruments. I wish I did, but maybe someday. I like to come home and hang out with my family. My wife and daughter, got a 2-year-old little girl.
Right.
And this job of mine requires me to travel tons, like 6 months of the year. So right. I just like to value my time when I'm at home.
And how much time is in R&D?
R&D?
Yeah.
You mean like building
research
skis?
Research and development, man. Building skis and testing new parachutes and rigs and gear.
I got a bunch of ideas for, you know, powder skis, kind of my passion. I like to have a little hand in the powder ski design technology stuff, so I've been playing with that a little bit, and I'm not really designing any kind of parachute stuff. I'm just kind of doing that sport. I'll leave that one to the real experts. But
making recommendations, of course.
Yeah, sure. But I think a lot about powder ski design.
Right.
I really find that fascinating.
Well, tell us about your ski. You have a ski nicknamed the Pontoon or something?
Yeah, I designed a ski called the Spatula several years ago because I had this idea. Basically what happened was about 15 years ago, the shaped skis came out.
The parabolic skis?
Yeah, people used to call them parabolic skis.
Right.
Skinny in the middle, fat at the tip and tail, and they made it really easy to carve a turn on the groom slope. But I noticed immediately was that it made it really difficult to ski in the powder. The harder the snow, the better they were. The softer the snow, the worse they were. Mm. Like, immediately noticed that. And so I thought, well, if the ski has this shape and it's bad in soft snow, maybe the opposite shape would be good in soft snow. And then after thinking about it a lot, I realized that camber had something to do with it as well. And so I thought, well, maybe, you know, powder snow is soft, and when you push on it, it moves away from you, just like water. You know, everything that you do on water has this reverse cambered, rockered shape. Mm-hmm. Boats, wakeboards, surfboards, water skis, they all have this rockered shape. And the characteristics of water, when you push on it, is a lot like powder. So why the hell don't we have skis that have this rockered shape? So I thought, well, why don't we build some skis that have reverse side cut and reverse camber? And I convinced the Volant Ski Company to make these skis called the Spatula. And they worked immediately, like unbelievably well. And since then, since that was the first attempt at building a rockered reverse cambered ski, we made some changes because powder, while it's really close to water, you know, the characteristics of how it reacts to you when you push on it is close. It's not exactly water. You are going to encounter hard snow at times.
Right.
So there kind of needs to be a balance. So that Spatula did all the groundwork, and it was a great ski, but we basically fixed all the problems and built something that's a little bit more realistic for powder skiing, which is, now I'm with K2 skis, and we built the ski called the Pontoon. And it's got some side cut, it's got some reverse side cut in the tail, it's got rock, 3-stage rocker. It looks more like a jumping water ski.
Really?
Than anything else. It's really fat and powder specific, and it makes powder skiing really easy.
So that would be more for the copter skiing if you're doing that experience.
Any powder day at any ski resort.
Really, any powder day?
Yeah. Cat skiing, powder, heli skiing, you'd be blowing it if you didn't have these skis, if you went heli skiing or cat skiing.
Right.
It just makes it too easy.
So if somebody was heli skiing, what are the chances they would just rent the gear as opposed to, you know, buying another set of skis?
It depends on the operation. Some of them have rental operations there, but a lot of the heli ski operations are aligned with a specific company, and not very many companies are building Rockert skis yet.
Yes.
There's more and more every year,
and
they're starting to figure out how to build Rockert skis, but we still have by far the best powder tool in the world.
Okay.
And you won't be able to get that unless the heli operation or cat skiing operation you're at has pontoons to rent, and there's not many that have that.
Right.
So it's funny, like I watch people on nice big fat what they consider powder skis, but they have side cut and camber, and they're still skiing down the mountain bouncing up and down trying to get their tips out of the snow.
Right.
And you see all these skiers skiing down the mountain bouncing, and why do skiers bounce and lean back? Because their tips are trying to dive down under the snow the whole time. Why don't you just make the ski with the opposite shape, and you don't have to lean back, your quads don't get tired, and you don't have to do all that bouncing. It makes it really easy.
That's great.
Imagine if you were water skiing and your water skis or your surfboard had camber and side cut. They would be constantly diving down under the water. And the only way to get your tip or tips back up and out of the water would be to lean back and to put tons of pressure on the back of those skis or board, and the tips might come up.
Right.
But the camber would try and push them back down under the water. It doesn't make any sense. So powder skis should have Rockert.
So if nothing else, if you remember for only one thing, Shane, you can say that you figured out a practical solution to powder skiing.
Yeah.
That's not a bad legacy, even with everything else you've done, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been a lot of fun for me, because I know that was kind of a happy accident for me. I never
It's extraordinary, isn't it, that nobody else could figure that out until you came along and just said,
Yeah.
Or maybe they just didn't apply it. You got it to that point of R&D.
Yeah, I mean, I had help with the idea. One of my buddies, Scott Gaffney, mentioned, hey, these bent skis seem to work better in the powder one day. And I was like, I was like, ding, we need to make Rockert skis.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Yeah, that's been pretty fun.
Yeah. So do you ever ski with music in your ears?
Yeah, sure.
What do you listen to?
Oh, man, everything. I don't know. Sometimes I'll put in some hip-hop. Sometimes I'll put in some classic rock. Sometimes I'll put in some electronica.
Right.
Metallica, you know, depends.
Just depends on the mood.
Yeah.
Yeah. No favorites.
Yeah.
No favorites. That's a whole nother dynamic. I mean, the ski experiences now, you got music pumping on the mountainside. It's hard to get away from that sometimes, unless you're really in remote areas.
Yeah,
It all seems to be so controlled in these ski environments now, these corporate ski environments.
Yeah. You should go to Japan. There's some pretty crazy ski experiences there.
Right.
You'll be in the trees in the middle of nowhere, and you can't see anyone around you. There'll be a speaker blaring, like, advertisements at you.
Really?
Like, what's going on?
I'm sure that's coming to a ski resort near us to offset the bad winters we've had, unfortunately.
Yeah, probably.
Tell me some of your favorite places to ski.
I love the Coast Range in Canada, from Vancouver all the way up to the Chugach in Alaska. It's a maritime snowpack with big mountains and lots of snow, and so that's the greatest place to ski in North America. And I love the Alps too in Europe. Huge mountains with tons of, you know, trams and lift access that takes you all the way to the top with a minimal amount of rules and regulations. Lots of big cliffs.
Talk about the skiing in the Northwest and how the moisture makes the powders almost stick to you. I thought that was a great metaphor in the movie, and how it's a different powder experience than the Rockies.
Yeah, you know, I used to live in Colorado, and I've spent time in Utah, but I moved to California specifically to get the kind of snow that I'd rather be skiing. A lot of people think that dry, light blower powder in Utah and Colorado is the best snow in the world, and I totally disagree. I'd much rather ski a maritime snowpack. And basically what that is the storms come in off the Pacific, and the first mountain ranges they hit on the coast, you know, they dump a lot of snow and have a lot of moisture in them. So that snow is wetter, a little bit heavier, it sticks to steeper slopes, and you don't hit as many rocks because you stay on top of it. You're not porpoising down inside of it and having it come up all over your chest when you're skiing. You can ski steeper things. You don't hit as many rocks. There's less avalanche danger. it's a preference, you know, it's a type of powder skiing that I like.
Right.
And as the storms move across the country, the moisture kind of gets sucked out of the snow, and it dumps drier, lighter, blower snow, and you need a hell of a lot more of it to not be hitting the rocks and the moguls underneath. But that kind of snow is better for hucking your meat off big cliffs into. It's a softer pillow to land on.
That's something to consider if you're considering
that.
What advice do you have for somebody who might be an intermediate skier or rather an advanced skier who wants to take it to the next level? Is it best to go with, you know, a group that's training and to get that expert advice?
Yeah, you can. People spend so much time and money on lessons, you know, and it's just like, go chase people around the mountain who are better than you. Try and keep up. Do everything you can to just keep
up. And watch them.
Yeah, copy them, watch them, ask them advice, but just don't stand on the hill all day listening to an instructor tell you what to do and then not making a lot of runs. Make as many runs as you can from bell to bell and chase people around who are better than you and come home totally exhausted. And in a week, you'll be a hell of a good skier. Or better.
And have the right skis.
Yeah, and if you don't have K2s, you ain't got a hope in hell.
Great plug. And what are we drinking?
Well, where's my Red Bull and vodka? Man, my session's closed. Sure feel nice today. Does anyone know where my Oakley glasses went?
In this Sony
room? Can't see without those.
We're in this beautiful Sony room, Richard.
What about, do you have to be an expert skier to like go up into some of these helicopter runs, or do they have it where...
They have intermediate runs, you know, on some of these...
Well, I would say extreme skier to expert.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, you got to be an expert to go heli skiing. But that's not true at all. I mean, with the technology we have now with skis, you know, these big fat rocker powder skis make it really easy. And most heli operations make all their money from the intermediates. And so the terrain that they take you to is pretty mellow.
Right.
It's really user-friendly.
They don't need the fatality to shut down the school.
No.
I'm sure they have a waiver a mile long, too.
Yeah, I mean, you can pretty much any heli ski operation you can go to, you can ski flat, you know, boring flat powder if you want.
Right.
Yeah.
When are you going to retire from the extreme?
Extreme
sports, yeah. Have you thought about that? What's, you know, what's the next level? Let's say you have a couple more kids and like, Dad, you can't keep doing these jumps and, you know.
Well, I think about that a lot. I'm 38 years old. So, but there's new ideas and projects that keep popping up that I really want to do and I really want to accomplish, and I know that I can do them and I know that I can accomplish them.
Right.
As soon as it starts to feel like I'm trying to do stuff that's out of my league or I'm trying to keep up with the kids, and you know, then I'll stop. But I'm never going to stop skiing.
Right.
I'll probably never stop base jumping. I'll probably just tone it down a little bit and step out of the limelight.
All right. What is the intermediate skier skiing as opposed to the expert, then the extreme skier? You know, we're looking at angles.
Yeah, you know, 25 degrees is pretty flat slope. You know, you get up to about 35 and it's getting a little steeper. You're going to go, you know, pretty fast down that. 45 degrees is getting pretty steep. You're going to have to control your turns a little bit. You know, that's getting up there expert skiing stuff. 50 degrees is steep, very steep. Be very careful. 55 hand, you know, there's not very many people in the world who are skiing 55 degrees. 60 degrees is almost unskiable. And I think a few people in the world have claimed to ski short sections of slope that are 65 degrees. But that's, I'm not even sure I'm buying that. it's
you want
possible,
to see the tape on that, right?
Yeah.
Shane, we could talk all day. I know you're a busy guy. We want to really, yeah. I want to thank you for being on the show. And I'd say go see Steep and check in with your crew, your film crew. You guys are doing some great stuff. What's your URL, your web address?
It is steepfilm.com, I think. Crap. I don't know. Steepfilm.com.
And how about the other crew?
Or Steep the movie.
How about your own personal?
Me? Oh, you want to go to Dude Man Bro.
DudeManBro.com?
.net, yeah.
.net?
There's a Facebook page, too.
All right, man. There you go.
Yeah, we got a new project we're working on. It's It's going to be on Discovery Channel in August.
Right.
Kind of showcasing my friends and I's base jumping exploits around the world.
Great. Well, we're going to look for the squirrel suits, man. Richard, you ready for the flying squirrel?
No.
Anyway, Shane, thanks again for being on Culture Catch.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this interview with Shane McConkie, please leave us a comment at our Culture Catch page on the iTunes directory. And don't forget to check out our daily content at culturecatch.com. Plenty of written reviews, video podcasts, and more. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. Converge is the word. Culture.